Hi, and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And panel, Dr. Dan Majila, the CEO, come Chief Investment Officer, come Supremo of all his surveys at the Public Investment Corporation, seems to be in more trouble than he's ever been. PRC runs, manages the government employee pension fund. That's about $2 trillion. The biggest investor on the JSE, Lucania. How serious is this current wave of sort of antagonism towards him?
I mean, very serious. I mean, it's got very implications for, I mean, it's easy for us to look at it as a corporate story, but it's actually really a story about the future of the country in terms of what future investment, how we channel all this money that also like public workers, pensions, and it's actually really about real people, real lives, and obviously it's very serious. I mean, it's not just a drama, like, but it's much bigger than that, I would think.
And Hillary, what are the sort of implications? I mean, if he's in trouble, as Carol Payton writes very well in on the lead in Business Day today, because an investigation into Majila last September by the board cleared him of any impropriety. He was supposed to have made or encouraged a company to whom he was lending money or investing in to help out a so-called girlfriend. They cleared him of that, but it's come back.
Look, I think we may never get to the bottom of this one, but the board did keep him in place in September when there was a push from, we think, the Zuma faction to get him out. And there was a sense at that time that he might not be pure as the driven snow, but it was better than giving the Zuma administration the keys to the silver,
yeah,
as it were, to the family silver. And so I think it all got a little bit complicated, and of course it has come back to about the PRC board, which didn't probe nearly sufficiently. And the sad thing about all of this is it sort of disabled the PRC, I think, for a lot of last year, for the latter half of last year. And whether one can make the link or not, they've made some quite poor decisions, and particularly decisions that didn't go to the board. And AO Technologies, Iqbal Survey's IT company, is one of those decisions that did not go to the board, was made by the PRC management, and as Business Day has certainly argued rather strongly, has been a pretty poor investment decision. So I think, as Lucania says, we are looking at the family silver here. We're looking at the pension funds of millions of public sector workers, and they are defined benefit funds, which means, and we can
remember
go into that,
days, yeah?
Which means that in the end, if there isn't enough funding to cover the liabilities to pensioners, taxpayers would be liable.
And Sukhanati, does that mean that I mean, as I've understood it, Dr. Dan has made some dodgy decisions in non-listed companies, but these are now listed companies. IO is or AO is listed, and he was about to invest a lot of money in one of a new Iqbal Survey vehicle called Sagamata Technologies, which the JSE basically just prevented happening after there was an outcry. Is there a difference between how we measure the PRC in what it does outside the listed space and what it does inside the listed space?
Look, with the unlisted space, it will always get away scot-free with murder, because those are companies you never know about until you really have to go find them. But those that are on the JSE, it will always be there. The financials are out there for everybody to see. Now, it's not the first time that it has invested in really bankrupt companies, companies that it should not have touched. Kamak Energy, which was renamed Aaron Energy, has now filed for bankruptcy in New York, and that's the story we are leading with in the Financial Mail.
This is the guy who
donated money
donated
to Jacob
money to
Zuma,
the Jacob Zuma Trust
and the university. His alma mater. His name is Kase Lawal.
Yeah.
He lives in Texas.
Yeah.
He's a member of the board of the university. After he donated 5 million rand to the Jacob Zuma Foundation, that university bestowed an honorary doctorate on Jacob Zuma, and Lawal is a member of the.
And what did he get in return? What was his reward?
Board. He got 3.5 billion rand of the PIC's money.
Into
his company, which was again bankrupt, and which the Nigerian government, as soon as there was a change in government, they kicked him out. they kicked that company out. Now it has filed for liquidation. The PIC had also committed to fund that company to the tune of $100 million in addition to the 3.5 billion. Yeah. This is just only one of the many deals the Public Investment Corporation did that it should not have done. And Daniel Machila is now in trouble because last year, I must admit, we heavily defended him against Malusi Gigaba.
We were blinded by the Zuma.
And of course, many of us, myself included, would repeat exactly what I did last year, the situation, all things being equal. You would have to choose between having Sibusiso Buthelezi, Sifiso Buthelezi, the chairman then of the PIC, and the guy whom Treasury said must be charged more than 200 times for alleged crimes at PRASA. Mm. You'd have to choose which devil is better for you.
Yeah.
And the devil, that one devil is now gone. We have to deal
with the Zuma devil gone, right? And Sifiso Buthelezi gone. He was former deputy finance minister. There are new kids on the block, right? Dr. Dan sits there still, but he's got a new chairman in the new deputy finance minister, Mondlungu Ngubele. Does that make a difference to the way this current pressure on Machila plays out?
Yes, absolutely it does. First, he was the bad guys wanted him out.
Yeah.
Now the good guys are after him.
Yeah.
That then you have to conduct a thorough investigation, not that whitewash that the PIC did last year. That investigation was designed in order to exonerate him after the public pressure, because Jacob Zuma and Malusi Gigaba could not sustain another PR nightmare whilst they were really trying to get their hands on the big safe, as Machila put it.
And actually, look, I mean, one of the things is that he is too powerful in any event.
Yeah.
Mm. The PRC used to have a chief investment officer.
Yeah.
He was it, in fact. Mm. And now it doesn't have one. He owns kind of everything.
And then there was Elias.
Elias Maselela, They drove out.
Yeah. Dan took his job as well.
Took his job as well, exactly. Right. So the guys, you know, we've seen in the last year what risk there is with a very, very dominant CEO.
And on those
grounds alone, I think one would have to question his position.
Is the board of the PRC, is it a transparent process to get...
It's sort of stepping up to the plate lately.
Mm. Mm.
I'm not sure if it was particularly much of a check and balance before. The finance minister. And traditionally, the deputy finance minister is the chair of the board, though it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And this board, it probably mixed, but is stepping up to the plate. And there are two examples one could give. The first of all, they were approached to bail VBS Mutual Bank to the tune of R1.5 billion, and they just said absolutely not. And the other is when the Sagamatha, whatever it was called, decision came to the board, the board, we heard, said no. It wasn't just the JSE that said no.
So the PRC is not in VBS Bank.
No,
the PIC
no, it
is
had
the
already,
biggest,
it had, it
second
is,
biggest shareholder
is.
In VBS
yeah.
Bank.
Oh, yeah.
But
it had already put money in.
Yeah, it had put money in 2012 and then put another loan. But now the interesting part again, the chief risk officer of the VBS Mutual Bank is a staff member of the PIC, been placed there by the PIC. Why did they get involved in the first place in buying 20% of that bank? They didn't need it. Secondly, the chief risk officer of that bank, being a general manager at the PIC, how did
That's
they...
That's extraordinary. Isn't there a huge conflict of interest?
There's absolutely a huge conflict of interest, but... Let's then draw this to its logical conclusion. How did, what risk policies informed the VBS giving one Jacob Zuma a loan which is equivalent to two annual profits of the bank for that past financial year? You go to work and you make a profit and you give 2 years worth of it to one guy who's bankrupt, who's completely uncreditworthy. And we now know, of course, that Jacob Zuma's dodgy loan was not the only loan that VBS
should not have done.
Yeah, most of the loan book seems to have been. What are the politics of this, Lucanio? I mean, does the finance minister have to sort this out? I mean, basically the PRC falls under his control. Or does Cyril Ramaphosa make a call and back up the finance minister? Is the finance minister not clean in this respect, but clear? Because he, at one stage when he was deputy finance minister, would have been also chairman of the
It
PIC.
Was right under his watch that Elias Masilela was kicked out of the PIC. And this finance minister, as he was deputy finance minister and chairman of the PIC at that point, declined to tell the people of South Africa why Elias Masilela resigned suddenly like that. So he's very intimate in this. The governance has to be sorted out. And
is he conflicted in this now?
We don't know what the issues are right now, but the evidence before or the allegations against Majila concern him only and his alleged girlfriend. He's not conflicted in that way, but it goes a lot deeper. When Nhlanhla Nene was chairman of the PIC, having, of course, been appointed by Jacob Zuma, and they did these loans that we've just spoken about, particularly the Nigerian one, Lawal Kalas, it was Nhlanhla Nene who chaired the PIC, and it was Nhlanhla Nene who got rid of Elias Masilela. Nobody
would have signed off on Dr. Dan taking Elias' job, bringing
Absolutely.
His other one with him.
Elias handed
Let's just
his
move
resignation.
Quickly onto the Guptas, if we may. Guptas. Are they off, Lukanya? Are the Guptas off scot-free after the NPA failed dismally, pathetically, to hold on to the assets that the SIU had frozen?
Wow, that's quite a difficult one. Do we even know where they are?
I think the point is that freezing the assets is just one mechanism in running the court case. It doesn't let them off the court case itself. But given the NPA's performance on the asset forfeiture, the we do kind of worry about their ability to do a full-on
Because this is just this is prosecution. Just one part of the Estina case, right?
Yes.
I mean, this what happens, Sikonati, next?
This is a civil case.
Yeah.
Which takes away the alleged proceeds of crime.
Yeah.
Then there's a criminal case,
right.
Which is the fraud, the
is
money
Is there
laundering.
Any doubt in the investigations that have been done mainly by the media that proceeds that should have gone to Estina helped fund the Gupta wedding in 2013?
The prima facie evidence before us goes straight exactly to Estina and the money going via Dubai and back to South Africa. There's no doubt there. What the difficulty is right now with the NPA, there's two processes, a civil and a criminal. The asset forfeiture unit is criminal and it's not prosecuted by the same guy who will prosecute the criminal case.
We would hope so.
So that's the difference. Ideally now that the NPA is really bad in terms of its capacity, you would proceed with the criminal case. Once you get a judgment there, you then go recover the assets. But of course, you know, you freeze assets because...
And the criminal case is set down for when, do we
Because
know?
You fear that the assets are going to be stolen or to be...
One suspects that unless Sean Abrams is replaced by somebody competent, the criminal case may never happen. But luckily, there's court action underway to try and get rid of it.
Well, that's another thing we can wait for. We'll see you straight after the break. Hi. Well, it never rains, but it pours. Now, Cyril Ramaphosa has got two big things on his plate. He's got, after the December conference that elected him leader of the ANC, one is land reform. The other one is the nationalization, Luke, of the Reserve Bank. It matters surely not a jot whether it's nationalized or not, but nonetheless, there are optics, I suppose, that seem to matter. He's committed to nationalizing it. He just has to have a discussion about how. How much damage could be done in that process?
I mean, it's an interesting one. As you said, like, it doesn't actually impact at all in terms of policy, in terms of the bank policy. I mean, he already appoints the governors. It's actually, as you said, it's just the optics, maybe the whole world, people fear this word nationalization. It actually does not mean a thing. And I don't know why
there's such an obsession. But if it doesn't mean anything, why is everybody so tentative?
Tentative about doing it or tentative about... I suppose, like as you said, it's about the optics. It's about what next after that. What do we nationalize next, or like
so there
in
is
terms
a cost.
Of policy?
Don't forget, there is a cost. You've got to buy out the shareholders, and some of them are those kind of aggressive people.
Some of them are foreign shareholders.
aggressive people who've been trying to kind of get something out of their Saab shares for absolutely ages.
What
it will cost at best some billions to buy them out, which is just a waste, really.
About 12 billion at this point.
Is that what they're sure? And how are they valued? I mean, the stock exchange isn't listed or anything. How do you value them?
They trade over the counter.
By law, they are actually not worth much, because by law the dividend is kept at 10 cents per share.
Yeah.
So it does not matter what the Reserve Bank does. You will, and no single individual may own more than 5% of those shares. So there's about 100 million issued shares, 5% of that. So it really is good just to get you invited to the annual general meeting have lunch.
Mm. How much of the bank do they own?
It's a complicated structure. Mm. Let's right up front say that's a worthless investment in terms of a.
Well, it's used to tell me it's worth 12 billion rand. Mm.
Yes, if you had 12 billion rand with you, you didn't know what to do. Yeah. You park it there, and every year you get invited to lunch, and you get 10 cents per share. Yeah. That's all you will ever get. Now, the thing about the Reserve Bank that should not be interfered with, and that Cyril has said will not be interfered with, is the mandate of the Reserve Bank.
Mm.
Again, let's break it down. Owning those shares means absolutely nothing in terms of policy as well, because the president appoints the governors.
Yeah. We get all that. But I mean, is it worth 12 billion rands worth of trouble to buy those shares off and then go back to the party and say, hey, we nationalised.
But with what 12
or
billion?
Or do we nationalise without compensation?
And it's not like the government has any money for other much more important things.
You
so there 12 is
billion.
That.
There's 12 billion you could spend on health, education. Is it really worth it to make a symbolic statement so we can say,
but the president seems to be in the position where anything
that
the party conference decided he's going to implement somehow. I mean, he might have a few summits in between.
Mm. The president is sitting between a rock and a hard place, in the sense that the caliber of the people that elected him and made this decision, they care nothing about what it costs. They actually know nothing about what the Reserve Bank and its ownership does or does not do.
Yeah.
The president knows that, yet it's a democracy. So they have mandated him to. Hence he comes back and says, I will do it, but it will not interfere with the bank. Why therefore do it? He knows there's absolutely no reason to do it. He actually was part of the people that wrote that particular part of the law in the Constitution, Constitution. Mm. And he admitted yesterday that I wrote this. The fact that the Reserve Bank is independent is exactly what we want. We'll nationalize it, but it will remain independent.
Yeah.
So what does nationalization mean? It just means you give those shareholders you spoke about earlier what they have always wanted, and they have always demanded a big payout, which they will never get, frankly.
Yeah. Mm. Talking about things that Ramaphosa faces, let's talk about land very briefly. David Mabuza, the deputy president, saying in Parliament, in a debate about the communal land tenure bill, that the land belongs to the people, i.e. and not the chiefs in this case, because he's talking about communal land, he's talking about land under traditional authority. That's another huge mountain for Ramaphosa to climb, because the Zuma administration pandered to tribal authority, and the new administration seems to not want to. That's a bit tricky, isn't it?
There is always a conflict, right, really, with having a modern democracy where supposedly like everybody has a say, and then trying to what's what I'm looking for? So to try to reconcile that with sort of this traditional other ways of doing things, which in a way are actually incompatible with the democracy.
What would happen? I mean, Sukunati, you grew up in an area. You grew up near Mkandoli, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got family there and all that. They cannot own the land that they're on.
Peter,
is that right?
Everybody that lives in rural areas where there's no title, you don't own the piece of land, but you occupy and use the land. Now, I inherited my family's property, and I have my own home on there and everything.
Yeah.
So does everybody. The village, the community, decides what to do with its own land.
Right.
It's under the leadership of a ceremonial chief.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the name of my chief is.
Are you okay with that, or would you prefer to have an individual title to
it? It would absolutely be great if I could buy out my neighbor.
Yeah.
Therefore, get his title, and so it goes. because then you can have more control of the land. Right now, the only place you can control is where your homestead is.
And if you and leave your homestead to come and everywhere. Work on the financial mail in Johannesburg and there's nobody at home, what happens to that land?
It waits for me. And anyone who wants a piece of land on what my grandfather used to occupy, which is what I'm occupying now, talks to me or does not get the land. After they've spoken to me, I have then to convince my neighbors
yeah.
that this is actually a good guy that we can have as our neighbor. And there's really no money exchanging hands there.
You can't say, well, you know, for R1 million, I'll talk to the neighbors.
Nope. So after myself and the neighbors, after myself and the neighbors have agreed on getting the person on there,
yeah.
then the whole village has to agree again that we want Peter Bruce in the village.
Yes.
Only then do we go to the chief and say, that man is we've given him that piece of land and he's going to have his cattle roaming around the village.
Why does Hillary? Do you know of a political party that campaigns for? Land under traditional rule to be given individual title. Is that DA policy? I haven't a clue, to be honest.
Sort of, kind of. Very explicitly, no. But there are lots of intellectuals yeah. and academics who say that you can't really address the problem of asset poverty, if you like,
yeah.
until whether it's in urban or rural areas, until you give people title to the land so they can bond it.
And then they can make their own choices.
And then they can make their own choices, but also then they can gear up the land and they can build on it and they can borrow against it and they can do what people yeah. who have title to land will do, or to their houses. But I don't actually know, I don't know that it's explicitly DA policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's amazing how much wealth you could unlock on that. Can you imagine all that land sitting there?
For sure.
So somebody can use it. You could use it to borrow against it, pay for education. It would just be such a liberating thing, bigger than any BEE deal you can do.
Talking about deals, help me with this, guys. Avenge, which is one of our large construction companies, seems to be the target now of a takeover bid or a sort of merger approach by Marion Roberts. But there's a German firm also wanting to buy.
No, the German firm came first.
Oh, the German
firm. The German firm. Well, I mean, it depends who you believe. The German firm, which is called Aton, made a bid for Marion Roberts.
Right.
And frankly, given the state of construction stocks and construction and the construction industry in Johannesburg, in South Africa, if anybody came along, I'd say for sure. But anyway, so they made a bid for Marion Roberts, which Marion Roberts' board and management rebuffed. The next thing we hear, Marion Roberts is in merger talks with Avenge, which is kind of in trouble.
So sort of defensive thing
so
against
now, yes, is this a sort of a poison pill or a white gnat or any of those things? This comes to whatever the takeover panel is now called. It's called the takeover panel.
Yeah, exactly.
And this counts as a frustrating action. Marion Roberts then claims, no, we were in talks with Avenge long before Aton came along. And in the end, it doesn't really... I suppose what the takeover panel has now ruled is that Aton must make a mandatory offer.
Right, which they've done in the past.
Which they've done now. Yeah. And Aton already has way more than 40%. So if a few more shareholders accept, then Marion Roberts is bought and I presume.
But it's interesting. So Aton must see something in this market. Presumably, you know, it might be something called the economic cycle. I mean, construction might be down now, but at some stage, particularly if we get land reform right, it'll explode again. And, you know, you can sort of understand why Marion Roberts wouldn't want them around or, you know, wouldn't want foreigners
Look,
around.
This is, in terms of the country, this is welcome foreign direct investment into Marion Roberts.
Yeah.
Of course, Aton has a target on Marion Roberts' overseas companies, cementation and the business where it works in the mines, it develops mines. That's what they want. And they want to clean out the construction company because it's got things like the Gautrain management contract that they don't want. Mm. There are many other, they've listed like all the negatives. This is why you want to buy this business. It's so bad. Then we'll clean it up.
Yeah.
Now the board and the management of Marion Roberts are really trying to frustrate that deal in order to save their own jobs. That's all there is to it. But in the end, it's a very welcome foreign direct investment into a sector that's very depressed, as Hillary has just pointed out. You should be rolling out the red carpet.
Yeah.
We tend
not to do that to foreign investment.
I do wonder sometimes how serious, you know, we claim we want foreign investment, but do we actually? And you can start thinking about the deals where a foreign company came in attempting to buy a local company. There was a South American bid for Adcock for Furo.
Happened with Massmart.
Is happening currently with Chevron South Africa. And you do kind of wonder, like, isn't it odd that every time there's a serious potentially hostile foreign bid, somebody local tries to protect their job by inventing another deal? And I do wonder how open we really are to foreign investment.
It's a real problem for the state ultimately, because you've got Jaco Marie and various other people going around saying, you know, please come invest in South
and
Africa.
These Germans are coming.
What do they do when they arrive in
the
Berlin?
The Germans come and bid. What do? Yeah. We say, oh no, we got a better idea.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big ask, isn't it? $100 billion in 5 years. We don't have yet a good story to tell.
It's not so big a deal if you do the right things. Yeah. Restructure the economy. Pump money into infrastructure. And get rid of the things you should not have. You've got something called South African Airways, South African Express, Mango, and.
Yeah.
Why do you need those? Get someone to come and invest in those companies and free up the state capital in order to do what the state should be doing.
Yeah. Mm.
Break up Eskom into enough pieces and make it a worthwhile company. That's $100 million.
Even down in Donduliwa, if you put a solar panel on every possible poor person's house, you could sell electricity back to the grid.
I will give you a piece of land for R500,000 down there, and we will get Cyril Ramaphosa to build a road.
The chief owned it.
Yeah, well, if he uses the East Cape Roads Department, the road will never get built.
I don't know what's in the 100 billion, but it's a good target.
Yeah.
So if it inspires everyone, then
if there's nothing else we don't lack, or we do lack, no, we don't lack
ambition.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week.